January 1995. We are going to discuss about Buddhism with Kiara Ultima from Switzerland. So we are quite happy to discuss about Buddhism. And then here also, our society for the propagation of Buddhism and meditation, the president of the society, philosophy, as well as the secretary of the society, you people also present here. We are discussing at the Mahadangayo National Meditation Center here in Rangoon. So, the first previous life little short information about Kiara Ultima's life, and then please explain us a little bit to know about you, sir.
People in Myanmar usually ask the question to all foreigners who working here in Myanmar, how did you come to the idea to ordain to take the Theravada route and to change your life? It was at my age of 23 years when I met the Buddha teaching for the first time. My friend brought a small booklet to me, and reading about the life of the Buddha and about his teaching, I was so deeply impressed about his teaching about the depth of his wisdom, that in that very day, or it was rather a night, and that very night, I decided to use my life for the practice of the Dhamma, to liberate myself as much as possible from the dukkha, which are always connected with any kind of existence, and to come to the aim of Buddha's Dhamma, to come to the Nirvana as close as possible. So, in the weeks and months after, I was looking for more literature to get more information, to get more details about his teachings. At that time, that means about 25 years ago, there was very few translations available, but I happened to get an anthology in one bookshop, and it was a quite good selection of sutras from Digha Nikaya and Majjhima Nikaya. So, reading Mahasatipatthana Sutra, I again fell into the kind of trance or kind of ecstasy, because I could somehow understand what is the way, what is the path which leads to the liberation. And being very impressed with the teaching, I made an idea how to meditate. Reading these sutras, I got the image or the picture how to apply the meditation, how to apply the mindfulness on the four points of Satipatthana. Short after, I retired to the mountains, I hired a small coffee and started this intensive meditation. I meditated for about 3 months and a half. During this time, I experienced lots of suffering. It was, in the first line, it was the bodily pain because of posture, which I was not used to. So the body faced lots of trouble in the time, in the beginning. Later on, also lots of mental suffering came to the surface, manifested in the way of sadness or wandering mind. And also some very deep openings in the mind manifested. So I was very deeply inspired by the practice itself, that finishing the meditation in a very, very balanced mental state and very, very open mental state, I was only reassured to continue my meditation, to continue the way I decided to go. In the years after, I was again involved in many worldly activities. I had to my job to be started also with a meditation group in the capital of Switzerland, in Bern. That was the first active meditation group in Switzerland. And we started to invite teachers to Switzerland to benefit from the possibility to have the advice of someone who has already gone the whole way, who can guide the students directly to the aim. So we had many teachers from Sri Lanka, the first teacher actually was from Sri Lanka. Also, one of the close students of Maharaja Sayadaw, Anagarika Munindra, is one of the first retreats in Switzerland. There was one pupil of Bakin, that was Ruth Denison, and American teacher Joseph Goldstein came in the first year. So we repeated this tradition of several retreats every year. I participated in most of these courses. In this year also, when Rebbe Mahasi Sayadaw happened to come to Switzerland and he gave the Vipassana retreat in Switzerland, very, very important meditation for me. In the years after, there were also monks from Thailand, Western monks who took the ordination in Thailand, coming regularly to Switzerland, teaching meditation. About 7 years ago, we invited them to make a branch monastery in Switzerland. So today, Switzerland has a Theravada monastery already. But there are no monks in Burmese tradition. So that was one of the reasons why I came to Myanmar, to have the guidance in the burning Satipatthana Vipassana meditation. Because there is that slight difference between the Sri Lankan and the Thai way of meditation. I came 3 years ago on invitation from Yuga organization, from Maharshi Tathana Yesha. The first year I was meditating intensively. Then my fellow stopped the meditation and he advised me to come to the school to learn the Myanmar language, to learn the scripture, the Abhidhamma, and so on. So this is the time now learning in the school.
Yes, I'm very happy to hear about your short. Mm. 6% of your life and Buddhism, how you get connection with the Myanmar and the Mahathir and now nearly almost 3 years, or it's a bit more than 3 years in Myanmar. So I want to question mainly about the meditational practice connection with the theoretical aspects of the Theravada Buddhism. So now you also have studied the Abhidhamma of Myanmar tradition and then the Sipana and so on. So from our point of view, so these Mahas, the Sipana, we of meditation, tempo, traditional, explanation, and now certainly this meditational process connected with the mental functions of the meditator. So the way the working people look upon the subject matter of meditation from the psychological point of view, or psychiatry, or psychoanalysis, these are the fields of study by Western people. And the same way, when we are going to study about our physical body, and then as you have explained, you know, we study about our physical body in terms of what, and particularly first of our body, and then how we can every part here, working in our body from the physiological point of view. Also, the modern scientists explain about our physical body. So these are also very good knowledge for us to have our understanding about physical body, inside the body. We have, from the traditional way, we have to learn the name and the part of the body, and the teacher explains us the nature of that. The nature of that part, for example, lung is 2 and 2, and heart is 2 and 2, intestine is 2 and 2. But now today, we have a lot of the teaching aid facility because the pictures of the anatomical structure of the body. So these are really very helpful to us. So not only these static pictures, but now today we can have the videotape recording the functions of the inner parts of our body, just like the function of the heart, function of the lungs, and so on, so and so forth. When we see these things with our own eyes, we don't have to imagine these things, but because we can see it with our own eyes, so that actually we can perceive the nature of the parts of our body. So we are very happy to get that teaching aid facility and explain our own process of meditation on Kayanupasana. This is the way what our society propagation of Buddhism and meditation, they would like to approach along with this path. So we call our way of teaching new method of teaching or new method of learning. So that's why we use it, new method of learning or new method of teaching Buddhism. Okay, the teacher will use the modern facility, modern teaching aid, and then we try to explain about these things. So this is our way of approaching learning of Buddhism as well as meditation, because we are quite sure about that, because meditation and different types, different way of meditation now today in the world are practicing. But our way of meditation is the Buddhistic here with the help of logistic theory, especially TRR theory, and we are going to practice and let's give you what. And that is all we need. See that? So there are so many subjects we have to discuss. Think about this. It's upon the Mahasipatthana, and we only even there. See? For example, when we are trying to observe the nature of the Anapanasati Samadhi. See? Anapanasati Samadhi is a quite a simple and obvious thing. See? Because when we are trying to understand about our own physical body and its function, this is most evident, easily to observe the nature of this physical body. That's why we start with the meditation of respiration, inhaling and exhaling. When it comes to that, traditionally we try to observe our breathing filters, the inhaling and exhaling, so the air particles pass through the nose, and then each and every particle touches the skin. And then we have the skin sensation. And then we pay attention to the point of contact. Yeah? So we just get this feeling of sensation. This is what is called kaya prasada. Let's say kaya prasada. Kaya prasada gives us the information, see, about the feeling. See, that is the sensation of touch. So we try to get that sensation continuously and steadily to fix our mind upon it. That is very simple nature. But nowadays we can extend our explanation of our understanding breathing process of our physical body. See? That is not directly related to the subject of the concentration, but this is the background picture of the natural process of breathing, why this body is breathing. See? There is one point that is also very important from our point of view. When the teacher gives us the training of his meditation, fix our attention at the point of the new tip, and then breathe in, breathe out, and so on. Naturally, we afford ourselves to breathe in, see, and then to breathe out, because we haven't got the experience. So we apply our mental force, see, to breathe in, to breathe out, and so on. So, when we are breathing, we have a feeling, or we have a concept like that. I am breathing, I am breathing, I am breathing out, I have a feeling, I have the sense of touch, and so on and so forth. So we try to concentrate on and on, on and on, to get that point constantly. Even that, we have in our background mind, I am breathing. You see that? So, this is the first step. What we are going to differentiate. See? What we are going to differentiate. Differentiate between what? That kind of breathing exercise and new understanding about this physical that understanding is not really new one, but our understanding when we try to get into that reality of bodily function.
Yeah?
So now the day, physiology explains about this function because this physical body needs oxygen continuously because this fresh air supplies fresh oxygen to the blood. And then every time when we breathe in, the new oxygen molecule gets in touch with that blood corpuscle and then absorbs oxygen and releases carbon dioxide. And when we exhale, when we breathe out, the carbon dioxide and water vapor came out as a old air. But new air, the fresh supply of oxygen. That's it. So this oxygen can tie the red blood corpuscle to the lung and to the heart, and the heart supply to the whole body to receive this oxygen, every tissue and cell of this body. So especially when you think about the function of your brain, brain cells are always in need of the fresh oxygen. See? The moment you stop your breathing or by anyway, when these brain cells stop receiving the oxygen, they cannot function, and then you collapse. See, that is the reality of physical body. So the main thing is, we are always in need of oxygen. Is it the point? Yeah, that's very clear. Yeah. So the second point, what we like to get one step up is, this poor little lung inside our breath, see that? And expanding, and then squeezing, expanding and squeezing at least 20 times per minute. So it is working from the very beginning of birth up till now, see? Many million times per year. So it is working continuously on and on, on and on. It cannot stop. It cannot rest. See? So, why it is doing like that? Because this body needs fresh oxygen all the time. So, this poor little lung is the carrying the burden or the duty to exist this physical body to be alive. Not only the lung itself, but every cell, every tissue, every organ in our body to be alive, they need oxygen. See that? So it is working by its own. That means according to our species, the human species or the respiratory system, whenever we have the blood circulation and respiration, it's in every animal. Not only human, other animals are also practicing the same. Yeah, all beings are doing the same process. So this is explanation of science as well as the explanation of Buddhism. See that? So what is the point of departure between two things? When we are meditating, as a natural process, I have a feeling, I'm embracing and so on and so forth. Because that's our natural way of thinking. Because I am fine. But actually, when I consider a thing, since the very beginning of my life, up to now, the only moment when I try to meditate, that moment only my mind controlling the breathing and trying to afford it. Other times, this body is breathing by its own way. It's not really completely automatic. See that? This is the point of departure between two things. Right? So what we should know is, what we must know is, this body is
doing the routine to be alive by itself. See that? So each and every breath is really a count for living, count for existence. Very, very important for each and every person, because everybody wants to be alive. See that? This is the most important thing for each and every living being. So this duty to be alive, doing our part of the body, so-called it lungs, and our breath, is doing by itself continuously going on and on and on, without stopping, without resting. So, when we get the clear concept of this point, when trying to reduce or trying to relax, relax means what? Reducing the effort of breathing, because nature by itself, this body is breathing. See that? So, effortlessly, you flow this air in and out by itself. See that? So we gradually trying to lower down and down and down. That means effort, effort, effort. See that? And then finally it will come to the stage. Naturally it will come in and come out by its own, without asking us a thought. Yeah, yeah. This is the natural breathing. That is natural process. See that? So this natural process is going on and on. There is no breathing person. No person involved in the breathing. See? So this is the body doing its own duty or its own function. So this is really important in this sense, because it's a protecting death and dying each moment. See? So this is really important thing, doing this physical body by itself from the very beginning of birth to up to this moment. Something about this, when we have to do some kind of work, some kind of work. For example, see, if there is a very, very important thing or some people living in that some place, so there must be a gatekeeper to watch those coming here, those who come and come out. See that? So the guard has to wait for the doors continuously. So if he is waiting for 8 hours continuously, that we, everyone, see that? So we have to change another bed for another 8 hours and so on. At least for 4 hours, we have to change three groups. You see that? Because of the responsibility, see, because of the duty, you realize that. So, when we interpret the heavy duty, see, in terms of rotation only, so-called personal body, or so-called the person of I and he, or anybody can do that way. We cannot do them continuously 24 hours. See that? But, think about the poor one, the little one, and our breath. It is working continuously. No complaints. See that? Continuously working on and on, and no change of duty, no rest. See that? So, these are the points. These are the points of what? Duty and responsibility both together. See? Walking on and on, on and on. To be alive. See? Now, the point is what? That continuous work of body. It's a really heavy one. Because it's to be alive. It's a walking. So this heavy duty, if someone in personal form, say, for example, I'll tell you that, see, the thing is, if we change over the duty of breathing to the self, to the I, or to the ego, so let you do by yourself, to be alive, try by your own effort, go on breathing. So what will be the self? How is gonna do that? See there? This is the reality of life. See that? Nature and so-called person cannot do. See that? Nature's work. See? That is the point. So, now we know that these parts of body, all we say that system, the heart, and that the vessels, see? So that is called cardiovascular system. See, the heart is pumping out fresh blood to pump out through the whole body, through the vein and through the arteries and all the. So, this heart, little heart, is also working continuously earlier than the lungs, hence in the womb of mother's life. It is doing its own duty, see, this little heart, see. So, it is nearly almost 70 times per minute. So, if we count the number, that will be millions and millions of times in our life. It is doing its own duty, faithfully, not failing. We are alive, you know? So, to be alive, each and every part of the body and all these systems are working together. They are whole. This body is alive. That is the point. This body is alive. So, this duty, see, very clear and very simple thought. And then, in place of heart, in place of lung, take yourself in place of heart and in place of heart, lung. How heavy to perform this duty is. See, that performance is not too hard. Because that heavy duty is expressing you, that it is dukkha. See? Dukkha to be alive, functioning continuously. No rest, no solution. Going on and on, on and on. See? So that is a sign of dukkha. Dukkha we call what? To be alive. See? To prevent death and dying. So these bodies, these systems are working there. So this kind of dukkha we call in Pali word sankhara dukkha. Sankhara dukkha. See? Because this is the functional distress. Functional, because we are continuously functioning, see? Functional distress. This is real. But, now we have to see the point again. This kind of dukkha, functional distress, or sankhara dukkha, is a really suffering. Not I, see? Not ego, not person, not any individual, but this physical body is carrying. So the real sufferer is not person, but in, you know, the eating every part of the body and eating every part of the system, they are really suffering. So we have to distinguish the point that continuous suffering is not by person, but by the body, physical body. So this is the point we have to distinguish clearly. See that? This dukkha is a real dukkha, but it is quite different from the pain and suffering of physical and mind. Vidita dukkha. Vidita dukkha. See? Different from Vidita dukkha. So Vedic advice is quite easy to understand, because when you have the physical pain, headache or toothache or some, everything of the pain, every kind of pain, this is called Kaimika Dukha, Kaimika Dukha, Dukha. And then sorrow and distress, anguish, agony, and many kinds of the suffering in your mind or in my own mind. This is the Kaimika Dukha. These two are easy to understand because they report you all the time. See? These are also the dukkhas. But the second one, and the third one, what we like to talk about the dukkha is Viparinama Dukkha. That actually is what? Decaying and aging of his physical body. See? So this doesn't give you information in terms of pain or in terms of suffering. It's always in this body. See? Trillions of cells, see? Composed to do all the work to be alive in our body. And then every second, millions and millions of cells are dying. See? Millions and millions of cells are dying. And then new cells are taking place and the dying cells. So, and the old one getting out of the filter, the new one comes into existence to take its duty. And so, this is the continuous function of our body. And then that, now we know that according to the scientific explanation, when we become older and older, see, the number of dying cells in, the number of new coming cells. Dying cells are greater in number, and new cells coming less in number to supply the place. So just because of that less number in the cellular form, so the skin becomes a wrinkle and so on. So these are the signs of aging. So this is also continuously happening. And the second point is, the quality of cells are also different. When we were young, the cells are good quality, but when aging continues, when it becomes a declining years of age, see, the new ones are better, the old ones are better, and then new ones become the less good, and then not very good quality. So the change of quality, as well as the change of number, are the factors for aging. This kind of thing is also dukkha, what we call Viparinama Dukkha. See that? Aging or changing dukkha. Viparinama Dukkha. So these are, if you say, four kinds or three kinds of dukkha. See? Because physical pain is the one kind, and mental pain is the second. And after that is Viparinama. And before this, what we have discussed very early, that is called Sankhara Dukkha. That Sankhara Dukkha is not easy to see about its own difficulty. Okay? So when we can see it with our mental power, or with our mind, with our thinking, see, with our thinking, we can understand now. That's the most important point of dukkha. See, it's a continuous. It is continuously having this kind of dukkha, as long as this system, these systems are working to be alive. See? So, when we can ponder upon the nature and the heavy duty of eating every part of this body. This body is really doing its own, and then at the same time very heavy, and this is also not sukha process. These are sukha. And these are the points. Yes? So when we understand these things, we are better to approach natural working system of our physical body, and then we can distinguish the point between so-called I, so-called my own personality, cannot do anything in this natural process. That's so-called ego or anything. See that this person cannot participate in it. They are walking by themselves. This dukkha, not on the person, but on the material system, physical body, is really suffering. So that is the point to distinguish between I and suffering. I am the body. The body is really suffering. Okay? So these are the points. So now I like to tell first point of dukkha. This is the physical thing. Very real. See? When you are suffering anything about headache or toothache or pain in any part of your body, you know easily. See? And then, why you get this kind of pain in your body? So from our point of view, that means from the point of view of our Hirawara Buddhist, see? Pain is really very important. Physical pain is very, very important. Why is it important? Because when we try to analyze the nature of physical pain, mostly reported by the skin cells, skin sensory cells report pain. You see the point? Yeah. And then these sensory cells are connected with the sensory nerve, and then get connected with the brain, and so on. So they are also working very, very important things. What is that important thing? That's also related to the subject of being alive. To be alive. See? That means, I'll explain you the mindset. See that? This physical body must protect by itself. See? This physical body must protect by itself. Each and every cell must be alive. When they are getting trouble, they have to use the alarm system. See? They have to use the alarm system to report, see? To report about their trouble. See? So for example, when your body is running, for example, the skin is running, as long as that kind of running offering, that place, all cells are dying, see, and burning. So as soon as that comes into contact with the hot body, these cells always contact with the sensory cells. Sensory cells report to the sensory nerve and tell the body, tell the brain, is there really happening? In terms of electrical impulses only, these are physical energy. But as soon as the brain, physical brain, informs actually psychical function.
Psychical function in terms of the heat, in terms of the burning. See that?
So this is a kind of sensation of burning. Very severe. But why it is so severe? Because to take immediate action, physical body call for the help of the psychical system to get that immediate relief. So psychical body, as soon as it receives that message of pain or money, so give the warning, give the message, give the order to the motor center. See, motor center just gives the order to the motor nerve. Modern nerve gives the order to the muscle. So muscle just contract and move away from that burning point. So this is the system. Now here you see that the point or the functions of body and mind. See? Now physical body essentially to be alive. Every cell, just because of this buffer, since the very beginning of life, these sensory cells are embedded in the skin. As soon as they get the trouble, they will give information to the required center, and the required center call for the help of the psychological message to take the immediate action in psychological sense, psychological energy, or psychological the mind, push and give order to the brain, so the motor center, and the motor center action very quickly, and then that. So what is that? Not to destroy this body, for the protection, that protection, then this protection in terms of brain. That brain is the only mind can tell in terms of brain. Physical body can not tell anything. It can tell you in terms of electrical impulse only. See? That electrical impulse, when it comes to the brain cells and neurons, neurons make the contact with the mental process, and mental process give it immediate action, inform in terms of vedana, dukkha vedana. That's a very important for the protection. So that dukkha vedana is very serious, and it gets to the motor system, motor nerve. And what the nerve takes the preventive action. So these things are working on and on like this. You see the point? So the first dukkha physical thing is real necessity for this being, because this body is well equipped with the sensory nerve to give information, giving trouble inside the body or outside the body, anywhere and any part. You have the sensory cell report immediately to take the action. Therefore, this physical brain is always telling to take immediate action. This is the physical dukkha, see? So this is also really necessary, because why it is necessary? Because each and every cell wants to be alive. So the whole system wants to be alive. So according to our Buddhist concept, so these are thoughts. These thoughts are from the very beginning, at the time of the conception, the speech and the kana. See that? At that moment, that's the only one cell of mother, the ovum. And then from the other side, spermatozoa get into the ovum. Spermatozoa, sperm theory, one string of chromosome. And then ovum contains one string of chromosome. Two strings of chromosome, each and every has 23, so they make it pair. See, 23 pairs of chromosomes contact each other and form new beings. You see that? But at that point also, we have to consider about the nature. So embryologists explain that as soon as the sperm gets into ovum, and then that becomes fertilized egg. See that? That fertilization from the physical point of view of the material way of interpretation. That's the starting point of life. But it is not complete from our point of view, from the Buddhist point of view. See that? From the Buddhist point of view, not only physical being, see, there is also mental. See? The mental. See? This mental, or so-called moment of mind, the very beginning of life, we call it Pati Sandhi Vinyana Dasu. See, that is a difference from physical ocean. See that? So, from our point of view, from our Buddhist point of view, each and every person has his own karmic energy. Energy of karma, karma. You see? Energy of karma is very, very important. See that? So, at the time of the moment, at the moment of conception, if that karma is not supporting, there will not be any Pati Sandhi Vinyana Dhatu. If there is no Pati Sandhi Vinyana Dhatu, even that fertilized egg will not last long. See? It will go by eternal abortion. That's it. So, important point is, from our Buddhist point of view, these 23 pairs of chromosomes, although they work together and then they have the chemical action, yes, and when they are taking the chemical action, they produce chemical energy. See that? Out of that chemical energy, there is the electrical energy also, thermal energy also, there, in little cell of ovum. So these energy, electrical energy, thermal energy, chemical energy, are physical things, physical functions. And then, the Pratisandhi Vinyana Dhatu is, that's the mental. That is the mental. So that mental energy works with this physical energy to be here, to start new life, new being. See? Without that type of the mental energy of this and the union, there will be no more living being. See? Just fertilization doesn't complete the work. You see the point? Yeah. And then, next point is, how this, the karmic force, karmic energy is shaping and controlling this process. Now we'll explain about the nature of the sex. For this little ovum must be male or must be female. So, to be male or female determined by the chromosome. And so they have the marked X chromosome, see? And then one chromosome. Yeah? So this chromosome supplied by the sperm from the father's side carry X or one chromosome. But as for the mother's side, he got that Y6 chromosome only. So from the father's side, when that chromosome carry one, see, Y and X combine together and form male, see? And then from the father's side, the chromosome carry X, and X and X combine together form female. So, for joining X and Y or X and X, that's only by chance. that is explained by the physiologist or embryologist. But from our Buddhist point of view, there is no chance. There is controlling sakya, that is karmic force. So if the karmic force is determined to be male, that must be X and Y combination. Yeah? If to be female, X and X combination. So this is the bhava, ichi bhava or om bhava. See? Om bhava means male, ichi bhava means female. So this kind of karmic force is continuously supplying energy, karmic energy to proceed psychical or mental processes and then physical processes to go on, to develop cells, multiplication on and on from the physical side and then from the mental side, going up, and continuously going on and on. Going up, it means the mental existence. Part of the each and every moment of mind is continuing to make the existence. See? So both mind and body going together to both the function of living being. See? These are the points we try to understand from our Theravada Buddhism with the explanation of the embryology and so on. So, at that moment, the karmic force tried to put every essential thing to develop the cells for the formation of eyes, for the formation of ears, and so on, and for the formation of skin. When they become the skin, there must be the tendery cells to protect, and then the eyes to see, and then the ear to hear. These are called kamajya rupa. See, kamajya rupa. Rupa due to the karmic force. See, these are the delicate organs. See, these delicate organs, the receiving organs, the receiving of that energy. External stimulus. See? So, this is our interpretation of being, how it comes into existence. Not only physical, but also mental. Both are new ones, not the old one, but they came into existence, what they want, that means at the moment of conception, by virtue of karmic force. Karmic force determines every detailed pattern to go through the human life. See? So there is the detailed thing. So the person may be physically beautiful or physically not very beautiful, that because of his or her own karmic energy, what he or she has done the previous life. They are the nature of determination to make the cells and skin to be fine and to be healthy and so on. So these are our explanation of the function of being. So, up to this point, what would you like to ask? Okay.
This was a very interesting exposition of transpersonal truth in the beginning when you spoke about all the kinds of dukkha. This was indeed one of the most important points in the Buddha's teaching which inspired me to follow it. That was this recognition how much dukkha is involved in just keeping being alive. How much dukkha is involved already in this fact. And of course, the more when we have some obvious suffering in the body or illness, much more dukkha involved in these things. But another part of the mental dukkha, so predominant today in the Western culture, the people in Myanmar have sometimes idea that the Western world is a kind of paradise with so many things, so many gadgets, all these cameras and videos and radio, televisions and wireless telephones. And in the mind of people who don't have it, perhaps may arise the mistaken idea that this kind of material facility can give some kind of a real happiness. This is a real mistaken idea. And I want to emphasize that in the West, actually, the people suffer much more than here in the Myanmar. I think after 3 years living in Myanmar, I am in position to say so.